Inside Lacrosse Podcasts, the source of the sport.
Thanks for coming back to the IL Preps Podcast. I am Terry Foy, joined once again by Ty Zanders. And Ty, recruiting season is hot right now. The weather's getting colder, but that doesn't mean the action is slowing down. We've got commitment news all over the place. We've got live evaluations going on all over the country. We are in the midst of a very anomalous November recruiting season in the sense that there are four weekends when usually there are only three, and we have two in the books, two to go, and there's a lot of action that we're going to get to. But first, let's start by talking about some of the action in the commitment realms. The last time you and I talked on the IL Preps podcast, one of the big takeaways was what was going on with Duke. Oh my goodness, have we found out since. First, it was landing number one recruit Andrew McAdory. Then it was landing number two recruit Keith Boyer. And then within the span of about 36 hours, it was the addition of number 10 recruit Jackson Gray. What a sweep for the Blue Devils. They have since added more to their class, but let's start with that roughly 24 to 48 hour window. Have you ever seen anything like it?
No, I have not. And I don't know why we even question Duke. I don't know why we ever worry about Duke, from a recruiting standpoint. I don't know, but it was an absurd, 24 or so hours. I think McAdory committed on that Monday night. And then at any point, that we put that article out around 6:30 breaking that news after he told other coaches. And then 9 o'clock, Tuesday night, both Boyer and Gray committed to the Blue Devils staff. Boyer's commitment went right out that night around 10 o'clock, and then Gray's the following day. Had a lot of coaches to contact and let them know. But, you really – it's hard to get much better than those 24 or so hours. And I think what I wrote in the article the other day was that really we're very used to seeing Duke stockpile top 10 recruits, but – we're not used to anybody stockpiling recruits in a 24-hour span, that are ranked that high. I mean, that was just unbelievable.
So let's start with McAdory, and I'm really interested in what your perspective is on how good of a player he can be, why he chose Duke, and what this means for college lacrosse. And I want to start by talking about it specifically through the lens of this has a rich get richer type of vibe to it, but that's not a really good representation of what's going on here because the Blue Devils don't have a ton of attackmen to complement Brennan O'Neill and Liam McLean. And so where do you see McAdory fitting in based on the player that you know him to be and based on the player you expect him to be at the next level?
Yeah, I mean, that's an interesting question. And I would answer that question differently if McAdory were going somewhere else. I think given the dynamic you just described and what will be around him, I think that he could very well play attack and kind of be the guy alongside Brennan O'Neill and Dyson Williams, with Williams and O'Neill being lefties and Williams being, very left-handed and O'Neill being fairly left-handed. But I think that McAdory is the kind of kid that you want on the field as much as possible. And, what kind of hurts that, he's so good in the middle of the field and clearing. I mean, he's one of the better clearing middies that I can ever, recall evaluating. I mean, he just gets the ball on the defensive end and he just flies upfield and it's a punt return or he makes the right pass. I mean, he has a tremendous IQ. So if you move him to attack, you kind of lose a lot of that. You don't want to, run him into the ground too much. But I think that he's someone that will probably play attack because he's not as much of that prototypical Duke midfielder that I feel like they're getting a whole lot more of the next few classes. I mean, they have some studs between Gray and Landon, Reed Landon, a lefty from Dallas, and then just a really nice lineup of 20s in Charlie O'Connor, Aiden Denenza, and Ryan McKenzie. So it's a pretty good, an awfully good group there. So I think everyone's just kind of curious to kind of see what that dynamic is like.
And then moving to the other end of the field, when we were talking about this Duke incoming class, this 2019 group, we talked a lot about how they had five long sticks as part of them, and it's a really rare rare type of thing. By adding Keith Boyer, the number two rated player in the class of 2021, a player whose brother is on the roster at Notre Dame, what do you think that means and says for the way in which the Blue Devils are building from the defense out?
Yeah, I think, you know, that's one of those things that I'll be able to answer a lot better, you know, in the spring as we watch some of these these freshman defensemen develop. But, you know, based on what I've gathered, I think that they've got a couple of kids that are projects, a couple of kids that are ready to play at LSM, and one in particular playing, you know, close defense. And the thing with Keith is that, I mean, he's unbelievable to watch. I mean, like, I mean, he was a fairly easy number two recruit to pin because of what he's accomplished and what he does. He's not super big, but he's incredibly athletic. He's mean. He's tough. And he has a motor, but he can play LSM and close defense really, really evenly. And that's where it's kind of, you know, hard to figure out where he fits. Probably at LSM, especially given the fact that they got Jake Wilson, who we'll get into. But yeah, I think it's very intriguing to kind of look at that depth chart for Duke defensively and just kind of figure out how all these guys will play. But they will. You know, it's tough to say.
So you mentioned Jake Wilson, and we will get to that in a second. But before we do, there's another commit that week in Brunswick midfielder Luke Waters, a four-star player coming out of a program that has produced a good amount of college talent in recent years. What can you say about Waters?
He's a lefty who's very athletic and, you know, will probably play defensive midfield at a minimum. But I can see him, you know, producing a good amount of points. You know, I'm not putting him on a John Prendergast level, but, you know, something like that in terms of someone that will, you know, play a lot of minutes for you and make plays.
So you mentioned Wilson. That was a commitment that came down recently. Depending on when you're listening to this, it would have been in the last 36 to 48 hours. What can you say about the type of player that Wilson is and what he brings to this Blue Devil squad?
He's mean, and that's probably, you know, an understatement. I mean, he's a banger. I mean, he plays really hard and he makes his presence felt and just really goes hard at all times and makes, you know, great plays. You know, I think I'm intrigued to kind of see how he can match up with number one attackmen, especially, you know, the fleet-footed types. I think maybe he's somewhat of a half step slow there, but I think he'll be a really good number two at the next level, but I can also see him developing into a number one. But yeah, his recruitment was very interesting. I know Duke and Notre Dame were very much neck and neck. You know, he had great offers at both spots and would fit both of them very well. And, you know, Duke won out and to kind of continue this big run for the Blue Devils. But huge. I mean, just another Team 91 player heading to Durham.
As a Shoreham Wading River product, a Team 91 product as well. And that kind of dovetails into the storyline surrounding the last remaining five stars on the board. The Schwartz brothers, we've talked about them on this podcast in recent iterations as well. Depending on when you're listening to this, there might be news surrounding their potential destination. We're you know, kind of expecting something forthcoming in the not-too-distant future. What can you say about the way, now that we're near the end of the five-star recruitment process, how do you kind of reflect on, just generally speaking, how it all unfolded?
Quick. I mean, it went quick, and I think that was my main takeaway. I kind of anticipated a handful of kids, particularly the Schwartz twins, you know, if they do make that decision, I kind of anticipated them taking a bit longer, you know, and maybe a few others as well. I mean, Griffin Schutz's his commitment to Virginia, we talked about a few weeks ago. I thought he would take a bit longer, being a football guy as well. But yeah, I mean, we're going to get to the point by Thanksgiving, all the five stars will be off the board. And, you know, that's beyond what I expected. And just generally curious to kind of see, you know, who else flies off there in the coming weeks from the top 100.
And now the process to determine or watch and wait for who is the first one to flip begins. But before we turn our attention to the future, there's a little bit more that we need to cover in terms of the past. In addition to reporting on Duke's crazy 24-hour run, you mentioned some of the other recent winners in terms of recent commitment news.
Virginia, Duke, Penn, Delaware, Richmond. And, you know, it almost feels weird to say this because I think that, like, you know, you have great options in a couple different leagues, but they're getting ACC, you know, kids that had, you know, nice offers, a lot of ACCs, getting, you know, the kind of recruiting class that you may find at a Virginia or Hopkins or Carolina, just stockpiled with, you know, loaded with studs, especially in offense. But Penn's done a really good job between Ben Smith and Tynan Walsh and Jeff Riccardelli, and then a few more DC Express guys, some guys we'll discuss later, and then a really, really special 1-2 punch on defense with Ethan Till and Tyler Keel. So, you know, two Bullis and DC Express teammates that, you know, play hard and can play both positions, and I think generally speaking, they should feel really good in Philly about what they'll have coming in a couple of years. And, you know, very impressed what they did as well as Virginia. Have, I think, three or four top 25 players. And then, you know, Richmond and Delaware. I think, you know, that was an interesting, you know, two teams that, you know, it felt good to highlight them. And I mean that in the sense that we are so accustomed to seeing the Notre Dames and Carolinas and Hopkins and Maryland and Dukes and Yales doing well. And I think Richmond and Delaware have done a really good job, you know, this fall, identifying and pitching, top talent. I've been really impressed with what they've brought in, particularly Richmond with some 4-star talents.
Yeah, I was. I found that to be an interesting inclusion as well, particularly around what it means for the way in which just the combination of how recruiting sets up going forward, right? So recruiting is an interesting game in the sense that the results are so far in the future that you celebrate the successes in the moment because you got the guys that you wanted that you think are going to be really meaningful building blocks for the future of your program, and that helps build momentum for other guys coming behind them, right? Like public perception yields this type of momentum, and yet it's not going to be 3 or 4 years before we know, all right, were these the guys that ended up being the reason that Richmond upset Duke or High Point upset Virginia, whatever the case may be. And so in the case of Delaware, with Ben DeLuca, who has had so much success and is really starting to leave his mark and imprint on a Delaware program that had been the cream of the crop in the CAA in the last part of the previous decade, but you know, had not reached that standard in a span in time when Towson had become the class of that conference. And so I look at it in the context of both what type of roster you expect DeLuca to want to build, and the addition of a player like Aiden McCaffrey, a top 100 defenseman. DeLuca is a defense-oriented coach. That was really intriguing. And then the addition of some guys that were really familiar with volunteer assistant Trey Wilkes in terms of his you know, prior club experience and you know, going into Central Maryland and finding a handful of really talented players from a place that, you know, hasn't traditionally produced high level college lacrosse players was a really fascinating outcome for me. And I thought that the storylines, as you pointed out, around those two programs were really interesting.
Yeah, and it's all important to discuss because, and I could talk about this topic for forever, but, you know, there's, I don't always, like, yes, we do want the recruiting rankings to be, you know, they're somewhat of a future indicator of, or indicator of future success, but it's not always that simple. And, you know, that's to say that, you know, there's three different things here. I mean, you're talking about identifying / recruiting and then scheming and developing. And I think that, you know, some programs do that very well. And I look at Richmond, and this is Richmond's, you know, arguably the most high-profile class, and it's very early to say that, but, you know, I also look at Richmond and feel like they're one of, like, Dan Shamati and his staff do an impeccable job of developing talent. They've done a really good job of that the last couple of years, and that's, you know, very apparent in what they've been able to do, both in terms of upsets in you know, the early spring, and then, you know, getting to the tournament. So, you know, I look at Richmond at as being a program that does that very well. And a lot of programs do that very well, and some others maybe not as much as the others, but they have a lot of talent. But it's never as simple as just getting the best players on campus. There's so much more that goes into it there.
So transitioning to, you know, some of the other topics at hand, like I mentioned off the top, we are in the middle of an evaluation phase, which for us at Inside Lacrosse means that we've been on the field a lot over the course of the last two weekends. And before we get to the IL Invitational, Ty, you were on Long Island about a week ago to check out the Elite Team Showdown. Is that what it was called?
The Elite Team Challenge, okay. Yeah.
So, challenge as opposed to showdown, I apologize. But what did you see when you were on site there?
Yeah, so I guess first off, you know, I got up there, you know, for the Elite 80, the back half of it, and got to watch some of the 22s and just kind of build somewhat of a list and watch the coaches coach, which is, you know, the fun part. You know, so there were a lot of players on Sunday in the 22 class that were there the previous night. With some 21s, you know, sometimes or some of those teams playing elsewhere on Saturday, then coming the team challenge. I think there are about 70 or 80 college coaches there, and I was very impressed. I think that, you know, to me, the fall is a time that, you know, there's a use for it, but I also feel like it's somewhat of a slippery slope to take a kid that blew you away in November just based on that November. But if it's a kid, I think, you know, in the context of this 2021 class, it's another. I felt like there were so many players that coaches liked in June and July and wanted to watch a little bit more of. If you watch them in the summer, you're like, okay, let's just see him in November, and you're impressed, you know, take him. But I would always be a little bit wary of someone that you're learning about for the first time in November, watching for the first time, and taking them right after, just because of how different the fall and summer recruiting windows are. But at the same time, I've seen a lot of players that I'm noticing for the first time. I've watched them before, never really noticed them as much, that have stood out. And you can kind of make the fair assumption that they've probably put the work in, and, you know, developed really well in those, you know, 3-4 months since the summer. And that's kind of what's been fun, to kind of get that, you know, second heat or third heat of 2021 talent and see what they can do.
So, Ty, I know when you were on your way back from Long Island, it was in time to check out the Baltimore Ravens game against New England, and I know that that was a tense travel moment. It was very high stakes in terms of making it back in time.
It was indeed, and, you know, I always try and maintain some sort of, you know, work-life balance and put work first, but I was a little bit weary. I was a little bit nervous. If I get back in time, landed at 6:30, I had some great lacrosse people on that flight, got to share that with, and I just hustled right back home, and was very grateful to live a 10-minute walk from the stadium, as you do as well, and also very grateful to get that win, Terry. You know, big win that I will not stop talking about. I will not stop talking about Lamar Jackson, but yes, a very nerve-wracking travel moment, and you know, I'll be in Long Island this week, and this Sunday, and we'll miss the home game, but you know, very happy with both the Ravens and what I've seen all November, and have some good stuff ahead.
Okay, well, that wasn't really going to be a conversation about the Ravens as much as an entry into our
it should
ad
be.
For this one. So I'm just going to really do it kind of awkwardly and say, I bet you tried to care about what you looked like when you were en route and you were all decked out with style in the Public Rec sweatpants that we talked about the last time we were on the Isle Preps podcast. You know, when you think about your favorite pair of raggedy old sweats and you love how comfortable they are, you just wish they looked a little bit better. And Public Rec's all-day, everyday pants eliminate the gap between style and comfort. Whether you're it at home, whether you're out and about, whether you're in the office, at the bar, on a plane, the all-day, everyday pant is the perfect for you. The new go-to. They come with waist and inseam sizing. They are available in 9 different colors, one for every day of the week, and then I guess the next 2 days as well. You know, there's 7 days in a week and 9 colors, so obviously there's more colors to choose from. Like I said, for me, the all-day, everyday pan is perfect when traveling. And if you are going to be hitting the field this fall, you should first head to publicrec.com/lacrosse to get 10% off your order automatically applied at checkout. That's publicrec, spelled rec.com/lacrosse for 10% off. Don't sleep on this rare opportunity to get a discount. publicrec.com/lacrosse. So, Ty, like I mentioned, we've been out at either Troy Park in Elk Ridge, Maryland, or UMBC in Catonsville, Maryland, checking out more than 1,000 players over the course of the last 2 weeks. It was an incredible amount of talent that rolled through, and there are a couple of folks that I specifically want to point to. You mentioned DC Express. They are our number one rated club in the class of 2021, and they were on site on November 10th and put in a really interesting set of three games. First against API Diamondbacks, against whom they took care of business, and then a really tense and combative battle against Amped that was pretty remarkable. There's a lot of familiarity on those two teams, particularly with DC Express Fogo Chase Mullins being a Richmond native, where Amp is based out of. And then in the nightcap, the last game of the event, the last game of the Isle Fall Events season, Tri-State jumped out to a 6-1 third quarter lead against DC Express, and that's when the Mullins show turned on, and they came back and I believe secured a 9-7 victory. Maybe it was 8-6. And for me, it was the first time to really sit down and kind of focus on this group. Like I said, they're the number one rated group by, you know, the wins, the score differential, all the things that go into our formula that determine our club team ratings. But they've also just dominated the fall commitment season as well. A ton of talent. I guess first and foremost, obviously, between Mullins and then Jack Frakian, who's the second-rated goalie in this class, the spine up the middle of the field is really well established. When you watch this team play, and you know they don't fall behind very often, but at the same time, it also, because they can win almost every faceoff, feels like they're never really out of a game, and that's what we saw against a good Tri-State team that was playing them really, really tough. What jumps out when you get an opportunity to see this team play?
I mean, the simple answer is everything, because I don't feel like they have that, you know, really a weakness. You know, they're physical and long on defense. They have an excellent goalkeeper and a very steady, you know, second goalkeeper in Jordan Updahl. You know, Jack Frakian did not exactly have his best half that I've ever seen him play against Tri-State, but they settled down and won faceoffs. But you know, I'm also seeing a whole lot out of, you know, guys like Spencer Hughes and Hugh Mullane that I think are playing really well, kind of coming out of their shell and playing more consistently. And, you know, that was kind of impressive to me, and also saw some attackmen, you know, kind of, you know, step up. Luke Raymond was one of them, you know, and a couple public school guys as well. I mean, it's just a really, really balanced team that we see in DC Express. And I think it was interesting because, you know, the three of us are sitting there watching that Amp game, and, you know, you, me, and Josh, and you guys hadn't watched DC Express as a team. You've watched all these individuals for Bullis or Minute Mania or Under Armour or whatever it is. I think I've almost seen too much of DC Express. I've watched them a ton, and because of, you know, how talented they are and how many great events they're at. And yeah, you really don't see them trail ever. So it was certainly surprising to see that, but they responded very well.
For me, one guy that I was particularly impressed with was Matt Gratano, a short stick D middie heading to Penn State. And you and I had a conversation after the game about where he falls among notable, memorable short stick D middie recruits, because it's not a position that gets recruited to directly very often. A lot of times college D middies end up becoming, you know, they were recruited as offensive players and then they end up finding themselves in that role. What's your opinion of Ratano, the number 91 ranked player in this class?
Yeah, I mean, you know, going back to our conversation, I feel as though he's a top three, you know, D middie that I've seen. And like you alluded to, it is one of the situations where, you know, had there been better, you know, D middie recruits, you know, that were two way guys or offensive players that ended up playing defensive midfield. Maybe, you know, but Ratano is someone that just, like, and I wrote this about somebody else recently, like, one of the nicest things you can say about a D-Midi is that they embrace the position, and I think that Mac does that exceptionally well. He's very, very good in the middle of the field and barely comes off the field, and just does a great job, you know, covering his man. You can kind of, you know, they have these great LSMs, but they feel confident enough, especially when they play a team that has multiple, you know, dangerous middies, just sticking him, you know, on a top midfield scoring option. And they should keep doing that because it's working out pretty well. I mean, he's a very special player, you know, great get for Penn State, who also got Jack Fracchione's commitment. And I'm looking forward to seeing, you know, Mac develop going forward because it wasn't like he was an absolute stud all spring. But the more you watch him, the more you appreciate him. And I'm looking forward to seeing what he can do in the future.
Well, Ty, that'll do it for this edition of the Isle Preps podcast. As always, make sure you check out insidelacrosse.com/recruiting. Follow Ty on Twitter at Ty Zanders. Follow me at Terrence Foy. That's Terrence with one R. And then follow at Isle Preps for all that you need to see and know in order to stay up to date on the world of lacrosse recruiting. And, of course, make sure to check out publicrec.com/lacrosse to get 10% off some incredible looking sweatpants.
Inside Lacrosse Podcasts, the source of the sport.